Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
What unions have done to protect workers in one state. More details on what the NLRB said about the union election at Amazon. And today on the show, Kelly and Ferraro winning a big case. And Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown. Welcome to the Thursday, August 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Well, this being the first Thursday of the new month, that goes to the trial lawyers of Kelly and Ferraro, longtime supporter and sponsor of this show we call America's Workforce. And joining us is Jack Corrigan, and he is one of the new attorneys at the firm, and he is very excited about the case that he's going to talk about today. And I'll tell you, this is a premier law firm. They have a nationwide practice. I'll give you the number in a minute, but just let me tell you the story. Sharon Jennings, remember that name, and he's going to get into the details on the case. She finally got her day in court. Her claim was filed just before the pandemic struck, shutting down courtrooms all across the country. The case was mesothelioma. Daryl Jennings, her husband, was diagnosed with that disease, a cancer of the lining of the lung, caused almost exclusively by exposure to asbestos. Well, unbeknownst to Mr. Jennings, he was exposed to deadly asbestos fibers while working as a mechanic. Cut to the chase, Sharon Jennings was awarded $10 million, specifically $10,657,189, against the company responsible for her husband's tragic death. Now, we're going to fill in all the details how this happened. I mean, this was a team approach. She was represented by Kelly and Ferraro's James Ferraro and John Murphy. They oversaw the team of attorneys led by lead counsel Sean Act, and Sean's been on the show a couple of times, assisted by Ed Kelly, Joyce Ricard, Marty Mason, and Jack Corrigan. Now, I'd say about half of the attorneys I just mentioned have been guests on this show, and they are literally jumping up and down at the law firm because of this verdict. I mean, and if you go to their website, this is nothing new. I mean, you'll see a $20 million verdict there. The toll-free number is 800-398-1795, 800-398-1795. And like I said, they specialize in asbestos and mesothelioma. And we'll explain on the show, what is mesothelioma? I just touched on it. What are the clinical signs? What information do you need to know as an asbestos victim like Sharon? What are the history and consequences of asbestos? What's the risk? We'll cover all of this with Jack Corrigan as our first guest. Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us later in the show. And a couple things he's going to get into. Number one, build America, buy America. The senator announced that the Senate's bipartisan infrastructure bill will include his Bridge Investment Act and his Build America, Buy America Act, two bills that he has led for years to create and support jobs in Ohio communities and make local economies more competitive. Now, some specifics here. The Bridge Investment Act will provide over $12 billion in funding to repair and replace nationally and regionally significant bridges, like the Brent Spence Bridge in Ohio. That's the bridge, oh my God, it's got a lot of play. It pretty much connects Ohio to Kentucky. And it's part of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. The package also provides Ohio almost $10 billion in funding to repair, replace, and upgrade roads and bridges all throughout the state. Now, that's just one state. There's more. We're also going to talk about the Renters Tax Credit Act of 2021, which will lower the cost of rent for families across the country. This bill would establish a new renter's tax credit to make housing more affordable for low-income households. These households, which include many low-wage workers, seniors, and people with disabilities, are living on low fixed incomes, and they're hurting right now. There's a lot of people hurting right now. I'm sure we'll touch on this eviction situation as well, and we'll get deep into the infrastructure. Hopefully, we'll have some time to delve into this, because I got to hand it to the Huffington Post, because they took a really hard look at that bipartisan infrastructure bill. And the Republicans were concerned on how to pay for it. Now, they move forward on the package. That's good news. Much of the wrangling was over not just what would be in the bill, but how to pay for it. And on the front line, Republicans and conservative anti-tax groups seem to get most of what they wanted. Listen carefully here. The Democrats propose raising taxes on wealthy individuals and corporations, as well as giving the IRS more funding to crack down on tax cheats. Makes sense, right? The IRS estimated that it missed out on an average $441 billion per year. This goes from 2011 through 2013. Just a two-year period there. And this was all due to taxpayers not complying with the law. Tax cheats. Charles Rettig, an appointee of Donald Trump, said the tax gap could be as much as $1 trillion a year. That's a lot of dough. Well, the Congressional Budget Office has estimated that another $40 billion in IRS funding would yield $103 billion in revenue if they close that gap. And the richest 25% of Americans, you need to know this, also pay less in taxes than many ordinary workers. And don't you think a lot of those very, very rich are using the law to their advantage and maybe sometimes going over the line, getting into the cheating part? Well, they are obviously being protected by many of the Republican senators. So here's where the senators are coming. They're saying, no, you can't go after those folks. You can't do that. No, 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 no. Instead, they're going after fraud in the unemployment insurance program, which benefits struggling Americans who are out of work. Unemployment insurance fraud exploded during the pandemic. And you know why? Obsolete state insurance systems. And they were hacked into on top of it by other countries. But they were obsolete. Democrats say they have no problem rooting out waste and fraud in the unemployment program, but they take issue with going after only that pot of money, long a target of Republicans, and not after people who are evading their taxes as well. If you're going to flush out the system, flush out the system. Just amazing. Just amazing. If we have time, I'm sure Sherrod Brown would love to talk about that. The Seattle Times has profiled the success of labor unions' political efforts in Washington state. This is really fascinating. Over the past several years, unions have successfully backed more than 20 laws relating to the strengthening of workplace protections, collective bargaining rights, dues collection, and membership. Unions this year also helped push through legislation relating to child care subsidies and capital gains tax. The article credits the success partly due to the influence of the Service Employees International Union's organization of traditionally unorganized workers, worker sectors like child care and health care. Healthcare workers in the state are now renegotiating their contracts, and teachers in the state have received double-digit pay hikes. Unions also ranked as four of the top 10 highest-spending lobbying entities in the state last year. You lobby, you work hard, you eventually get what you want. And it's working in Washington State. Yesterday on the show, I was talking about the Amazon situation in Bessemer, Alabama. And if you missed it, there's going to be a new election. Well, maybe not. It's hard to say right now. The hearing officer for the NLRB issued a report this week recommending that workers vote in a fresh election. Why? Because Amazon tainted the mail-in election that ended in April. The finding undermines what Amazon had cast as a clean and resounding rejection of the retail, wholesale, and department store union by its workers. They're saying, oh, well, they didn't want the union. Well, there's more to the story. The official said, I'm speaking about the NLRB, that Amazon spoiled the process for a fair election in two ways. The company distributed vote no paraphernalia to workers in front of supervisors, which may have been coercive. And the other part, they pressured the U.S. Postal Service to place a mailbox at the warehouse for the election. Now, the election was done through mail ballots, and the NLRB had determined beforehand that there would not be drop boxes on site. They said that. Well, Amazon insisted on placing a mailbox at work, which usurped the board's exclusive role in administering union elections. That's what the hearing officer, Kirsten Myers, wrote. The mailbox alone destroyed the laboratory conditions and justifies a second election, she concluded. Now, again, this finding does not guarantee another election. Her recommendation will now go to a regional director at the NLRB, and after that, potentially to the five-member board in Washington that ultimately settles such disputes on appeal. Now, here's the good news. The Senate recently confirmed two of President Biden's picks for that board, assuring that Democrats will have control of it by September, and a Democratic majority is more likely than a Republican majority to rule in favor of unions, especially in a case like this one. Stu Applebaum, who is the president of the retail workers, said the union obviously supported Myers' findings. And this is what he said. Their behavior throughout the election was despicable. Amazon cheated. They got caught. And now they're being held accountable. Amazon, now they're defending their decision to have the mailbox placed on site by noting that it was the U.S. Postal Service to put it there. Now, Myers, she's the hearing officer, she's not buying the argument, calling it a mere scapegoating, and she noted that Amazon has procured its own mailbox in case the Postal Service did not decide to place one there. What's more, Myers found that the Postal Service, which is an independent federal agency, went to unusual lengths to help Amazon. Why? Because they're a major client. Yeah. Amazon uses the Postal Service to deliver their packages. And the Postal Service is unionized. We have an issue here. We definitely have an issue here. But hats off to Dave Jamieson of the Huffington Post, who really got into the details on this story and did a great job. And certainly one to watch. All right, we have to break. When we come back, Jack Corrigan from Kelly and Ferraro on a huge win for the firm. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S.,
Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one right now. And as I indicated at the top of the show, this is our segment we do each and every month with the trial lawyers of Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com. And joining us is Jack Corrigan. He's a newcomer to the firm. He actually just graduated from the Marshall College of Law in the spring, and he worked for several years as a law clerk at the firm. Jack Corrigan, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Flash. Thanks for having me on.
So, boy, talk about timing. So you're working as a clerk at the firm, and here comes this case, a mesothelioma case, and there's many cases that Kelly and Ferraro have been involved in over the years, successfully, I might add. If you go to the website, you can read about them. But this is interesting because you go in there, you're working on this as a clerk, then you become an attorney, and a week ago today, last Thursday, here comes the verdict of over $10 million. Jack, how do you do that kind of thing? I mean, what you got some lucky stars over you.
Well, it really is a testament to how well we work as a team at Kelly and Ferraro. It was a tough year with the pandemic delaying everything, but we kept our sights set on the end goal of getting justice for Sharon Jennings, and we thankfully were able to bring her a little bit of peace after she lost her husband.
So let's get into the details of the case. Her husband, Daryl Jennings, was diagnosed with mesothelioma. This goes back, he died, 2018. Talk to me about the case. And again, you were part of a team, a very successful team here. And in the course of our conversation, I want you to tell us what mesothelioma is and how dangerous and how prevalent it has been in the workforce for so many people. But let's start with Daryl. What happened with Daryl?
Sure. So Daryl was somebody who performed mechanic work for friends and family. It was a side business that he ran with a friend. And in the course of running this side business, they performed brake changes and they used Bendix brakes. And the Bendix brakes, we thankfully were able to prove that it was a substantial factor in causing Daryl's mesothelioma and thus Daryl's death. So what mesothelioma is it is a cancer of the lining of the lung. The mesothelial cells that line the lung provide lubrication that prevents the lungs from rubbing against the chest cavity. So once you are diagnosed with mesothelioma, it is essentially a death sentence. Daryl was diagnosed and he lived for 80 days after his diagnosis. They were not a pretty 80 days, and Sharon was the one who took care of him the entire 80 days. And unfortunately, mesothelioma is a very rare cancer. However, it is more prevalent amongst the working class who are exposed to various products that contained asbestos.
So it's my understanding. Now, this case was kind of on hold because of the pandemic. Is that right? All trials were delayed as a result of that?
Yeah, it was delayed just about over a year due to the pandemic. All cases war delayed. So we had over a year to wait and prepare for the trial.
Jack, if you don't mind, let's talk about the preparation for a case like this. I mean, in order to achieve a $10 million plus verdict, there's a lot that has to go into it. Can you get into that? I know you were kind of on the ground floor when you were working as a law clerk. Talk to me about the process, what you had to go through during that time. And again, this was when the pandemic was going on. Can you get into that?
Sure. So I know that Sean Acton was the lead counsel on this case. He's one of the partners at Kelly & Ferraro. And I know he worked tirelessly. As well as the other four attorneys that helped him prepare and try the case. Even before I was an attorney, when I was still a law clerk, I helped Sean prepare some of his slides for his arguments. So he had a basic outline of what he wanted to do even before the pandemic shut down the court systems. And then it was just pretty much a year of refining and tweaking and just making sure that all of our arguments were airtight.
How long was the actual trial? I mean, when the courts finally opened, how long did it go?
It went for just over 2.5 weeks.
That's it. Wow, that's pretty quick. What about the courtroom drama? There had to be some of that going on. And you know, when you got a firm, obviously, they're going to put some high-profile defense attorneys over there to try to make sure that, you know, their side is heard. How did that pan out?
Yeah, there were a couple times when both sides got pretty passionate about their stance, and the judge had to kind of intervene and calm everybody down. But you know, it was pretty exciting to see as a new attorney to watch both sides be very passionate for representing their client and do it with professionalism while still being able to show that they really care about their cause.
Now, where did you fit in on this? I mean, there was a team. I mean, did you like take turns with certain questioning? Can you tell us about that part?
So I since I'm so new, I didn't do any of the questioning. I was, I read in a couple of a part of a deposition at trial, and I pretty much was there to do whatever was asked of me. So if there's anything that anybody needed, I was in charge of making sure that they had that.
Gotcha. How long was the jury out once they they finished the arguments there? Did it take some time for them to come up with that verdict?
They deliberated for just about a full day. They got the case in the afternoon of Wednesday, and then they returned a verdict just after lunch on Thursday.
And what was the can you describe the courtroom once that verdict was read? The $10,657,000 against the company.
Well, I can tell you that walking into the courtroom, I was extremely nervous, having this be my first time I am listening to a jury return a verdict. But once the verdict was read and the judge informed us of the amount that the jury returned for us, it was just a sense of joy and closure and comfort for our client.
A little celebrating at the law firm that day?
We made sure we had some fun. You know, it was the culmination of a lot of work and a couple years worth of work. So we had some fun. Yeah.
Now, okay. Now that we have this verdict, you know, there's an appeals process. Do we know anything about that yet? The company's probably going to come back and say that's too much money. Is that in the works right now, to your knowledge, or what?
To my knowledge, not as of yet, but we're prepared for that to happen. I think that's a pretty common thing that these companies appeal these verdicts, but I know that we've been successful in the past of in the appeals court of having these verdicts stand. So I know that we're gearing up for that, and I'm sure that that'll be the next thing that rolls across all of our desks.
Well, just savor the moment. All right. Great news. All right. Can you stay with us for another segment here, Jack?
Yes, definitely.
Jack Corrigan is his name. He's one of the new attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com. The toll-free number nationwide is 800-398-1795. And if you go to their website, you will see many jury awards in the millions of dollars, $20 million, I know, for one. So that just shows you what kind of attorneys they are. We'll continue the conversation with Jack. And later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us, and we're going to get into infrastructure and why we need to buy American. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyAndFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute and do this. Sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. And we have a five-star, maybe a 10-star law firm on our live line. And joining us is Jack Corrigan, who just joined the firm full time after he got out of law school. He was a law clerk for several years when he was going to school at the Marshall College of Law in Cleveland, Ohio, which is connected to Cleveland State. And here he is. Last week, 1 week ago today, a jury awarded a $10 million verdict in a mesothelioma case. And there was a lot of celebrating at Kelly and Ferraro. That toll-free number again is 800-398-1795. Now, mesothelioma is it's kind of a specialty, asbestos and mesothelioma. What do they call it? Meso cases over there at the law firm, Jack? Is that how they term them?
Yeah, it's shorthand meso. It's a pretty rare cancer in America.
And it affects the lining of the lungs. And in case you're just checking in with us now, this is horrible. The case involved Daryl Jennings, and he was retired, and he was diagnosed with mesothelioma in his late 70s. When he got the diagnosis, he lived only 80 days. That was it. Horrible death. Horrible death. The jury came back with $10,657,189, and they found the company responsible. And the company was, Honeywell International Bendix Brakes, which contains asbestos. And I know the asbestos has been used in those brakes probably still today. In some cases, those brakes are still around. And asbestos, I know, was taken off the market in the late 70s, I believe. Let's talk about the education process here. Now, I know you just got out of law school, and there had to be a lot of homework you had to do, Jack, to prepare for this case. Can you speak to that as far as, and I'm thinking to myself, you probably learned a lot of things yourself that you weren't aware of. Can you speak to that to our listeners?
Sure. There definitely was a lot of work that went into preparing for the case, and a lot of it just naturally happened over time of me being a law clerk. I summarized so many depositions and so many trial transcripts of various experts that I gleaned a basic understanding of what mesothelioma is, how it's contracted, and how it affects the human body. So I had a base knowledge going into the trial in regards to the disease, but sitting through the trial, listening to all the experts is really where I think it hit home to me at how impactful mesothelioma is on the victims who suffer from it.
And Sharon Jennings, the widow, is in the courtroom listening to all this. How did she hold up throughout the trial, Jack?
She did a great job. She was attentive. She was one of the nicest people that I think I've ever met in my entire life. She's somebody that you would have loved to have had be your grandmother. The entire time she was worried about us, worried that we were getting enough sleep, worried that we were eating enough at lunch. She was just a very, very kind, caring person. And she did a great job when she testified. She had to listen to some pretty horrible graphic details about her husband's death and essentially had to relive it in the courtroom in the presence of more than 10 strangers. But she was a strong woman. She held up. She did a great job.
So with her being on the stand, and I know those defense attorneys, they can get pretty nasty. I take it she held up pretty well despite all what they said to her and brought up?
Yeah, they actually didn't cross-examine her at all. We did a good job of bringing out all the information that we needed out of her on direct, and we did a good job of kind of not allowing them to have much to cross-examine her on. So she fortunately was spared having to be cross-examined by the defense attorneys. But the way that she handled herself on direct, I'm sure she would have done just fine on cross.
Jack, let me ask you, what was the defense in all this? Because, I mean, studies over the years show the cause and effect here with asbestos, mesothelioma, cancer, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, how did they present their side of the case?
Well, they all defendants have these experts who have written reports that have been funded by brake manufacturing companies that essentially say that the asbestos in these brakes was not harmful. And it is refuted by a vast body of scientific knowledge and literature that states the exact opposite, that any asbestos in any products in any form, in any size, is harmful and can cause cancer in humans.
All right. I'm just thinking to myself that this is going to open the doors for other litigation. And on your website, if you those of you listening to the show right now, if you go to the website, Kelly-Ferraro, there's a list of job sites. I'm going to run them down. General Motors plants in Norwood, Warren, or Mansfield, Ohio. And this is just Ohio. I know you practice nationwide. American Sheet and Tin Plate Company in Alliance, Columbus Steel Company, General Electric in Canton, Goodyear Aircraft in Canton, the Ford Motor Company in Cincinnati, American Steel Foundry in Alliance, Dayton Power and Light, Akron Gas Company, BF Goodrich Chemical Company, that's in Avon Lake, the Diamond Rubber Company in South Akron, and the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company in Akron. And the attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro ask that you contact them if you believe you or your family member may have become ill through exposure to asbestos at those hazardous those sites. And as you know, through the conversation here, this is a horrible disease. And Kelly and Ferraro has been able to achieve some incredible verdicts here. So, Jack, what's the next step here? We touched in the first segment, there's probably going to be an appeal case, but are there other cases like this at Kelly and Ferraro that you can speak to right now?
Yeah, we have a few cases that are scheduled to go to trial before the end of this year. Now, whether those go to trial or not depends on the court schedule because, again, all the courts are very backlogged with having a year of not being able to hear any cases. But as of right now, we have, I believe, two scheduled to go to trial before the end of the year. So it'll be a busy finish to 2021 for us at Kelly and Ferraro.
Well, hats off to the team here. Again, Kelly and Ferraro, James Ferraro and John Murphy oversaw the team of attorneys led by lead counsel Sean Acton, assisted by Ed Kelly, Joyce Ricard, Marty Mason, and the gentleman on our line right now, Jack Corrigan. Well, my hats off to you. Congratulations. Savor the moment. Keep doing what you're doing. And again, that toll-free number, we got to mention that, 1-800-398-1795. That's toll-free anywhere in the United States, 1-800-398-1795. Jack, thanks for joining us. Thanks for your comments on what happened here. And you tell everybody, congratulations, all right?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All I can say is, wow, $10 million plus dollars. Hats off to the attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro, and thank you, Jack Corrigan. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about why we need to make it in the USA. And later in the show, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly and Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly and Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. We're in a holding pattern here for Senator Sherrod Brown. He should be joining us in about 5 to 7 minutes. But I want to share with you some good news coming out of Washington after years of casting aside rulemaking in favor of letting the market do its work. The Federal Trade Commission said that it will now penalize companies as much as $43,280. I don't know where they came up with the 280, but hey, $43,280 if they label their goods as made in the USA when they are not. The final rule was made official 2 weeks ago, July 14th, and goes into effect next week, August 13th. When a government agency wants to do a new regulation, they start with a notice of proposed rulemaking, which is when the agency tells the public that they are thinking of doing a particular regulation and are open to comments. The process generally takes 6 months to a year, depending on the complexity of the regulation. The final rule means the process is complete, so the decision has been made to penalize misleading made in the USA labeling, and a lot of that goes on. There is no fixed percentage of content from the US for made in the USA labeling. It depends on the products. Not all companies will even label their products because either the majority of it is sourced from abroad or they're not sure if they can call themselves domestic made due to percentage standards that differ across state lines. So the FTC still allows so-called qualified claims where the manufacturer says something like made in the USA with imported materials. What's clear in the FTC policy is that this cannot be something like a paint job or a screwdriver assembly. As part of the rule, the agency said in their section on guidance that the Department of Agriculture will begin to review the USDA's Made in USA labeling standards for beef, and that comes at the behest of the farmers, ranchers, and agriculture industry workers. However, Tom Vilsack, who is the agriculture secretary, is very much pro-World Trade Organization, and he says he will hold fast to the rule that does not permit the U.S. to differentiate locally raised beef from foreign sources. It's always good to look at the label. I always say that because you never know. And if it's coming from China or Vietnam, shy away from it. I understand there's people that need jobs in those countries, but if we can get as many products made in the USA, and Sherrod Brown's going to speak to that when he comes on board. Congressman Tim Ryan is applauding the United States International Trade Commission's ruling, and this happened just yesterday, for Vallourec anti-dumping and countervailing duty petitions. Now, this is a final action in the investigation and ensures Vallourec and its employees will receive the intended relief from the impacts of unfairly dumped and subsidized imports of seamless pipe from Czechia, Korea, Russia, and Ukraine. Now, Czechia used to be the Czech Republic. They changed their name to Czechia. Unfortunately, unfair trade practices have hurt communities in northeastern Ohio and across the United States for decades. Just year 59 of the local jobs were permanently cut from the Vallourec facility in Youngstown. And as a country, we must stand up and speak out against these practices. That comment came from Tim Ryan, congressman in the Mahoning Valley, Youngstown area, and he has been very, very outspoken on this over the years. In March of this year, he testified before the International Trade Commission for this investigation, calling on the commission to ensure U.S. trade remedy laws are enforced and relief is given due to the harmful impacts of unfairly dumped and subsidized imports of seamless pipe from Czechia, Korea, Russia, and Ukraine. And this has been going on, and the steelworkers have been fighting this for years. This is a significant week in labor history. August 3rd, that was 2 days ago. August 3rd, 1981, some 15,000 air traffic controllers, most of the members of the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association, better known as PATCO, began a strike for the future of their profession and their rights and safety of the air traveling public. And as you recall, President Ronald Reagan threatened to fire those who did not return to work within 48 hours. Well, some 11,000 stayed on strike and were fired 2 days later. In conjunction with the 40th anniversary of the start of the PATCO strike, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, better known as NATCA, featured an interview with one of their employees, an air traffic controller, who was actually fired on this week 40 years ago, 1981, and then rehired in 1997 after the ban on rehiring air traffic controllers fired by Reagan was lifted. That's what Reagan did. I mean, this was a union guy, too. He was a member of the Screen Actors Guild. They kicked him out of the Screen Actors Guild after that happened. And I have said this on the show time and time again. When Reagan fired the air traffic controllers, that was a moment in labor history because it gave a green light to corporate America to do what they wanted to do with unions. Yeah, it was a cascade downward. We're going to do more on this at the end of this month with John McCartan. John contributes to the Working Class Studies blog, and he followed that case throughout the years. And he, too, agrees that that was a moment in history. Right now, let's go to line number two. And I believe we have Senator Sherrod Brown joining us. Senator, welcome to the show.
Good to be back. Yeah, to talk about a jobs bill, infrastructure, and finally doing stuff right. Yep.
I want to get into that infrastructure bill because I was talking at the beginning of the show about, I guess, the Republicans. We're talking specifically about the bipartisan infrastructure bill. It's not the big one that Biden wants to do. But apparently, in order to pay for it, there was a proposal to go after the tax cheats. And there's many of them in America. Instead, they want to go after unemployment compensation and the fraud in that. What's going on there, Senator?
Well, that's because that's who they are. Okay, put a little history on this. We've done your show for a decade now or longer than that, 15 years probably. And we 4 years ago, we talked about the Democrats wanted to work with Trump, and we thought we had a big infrastructure deal, and we were working to get prevailing wage. We were trying to make this work. And then all of a sudden, Trump and the majority party then said, no, we're going to do a tax cut. And they spent more than $1 trillion on a tax cut. 70% of it went to the richest taxpayers. So you know where their priorities are. Now a new president, a different Senate. We're doing a huge infrastructure bill. One of the ways we wanted to pay for it was to hire more IRS auditors to go after wealthy taxpayers. Now, rich taxpayers are a lot harder to audit than you are and than I am, that just get a W-2 and pay our taxes straight and don't have a zillion investments and a whole bunch of real estate and all that. Well, so they wanted to spend some money. We wanted to spend some money. Something like you get more than $10 for every dollar you spend with an IRS auditor. And Republicans said no. So in other words, they cut taxes on the rich 4 years ago, and now we don't want to stop tax cheats. And we could have had easily $100 billion, easily, probably three or four times that if we had done it right, if we invest in IRS, in training high-level auditors to go after rich people's taxes. But the tax cheats were protected by one political party, by Trump's party.
And the unemployment insurance fraud that they want to go after is mainly due to obsolete systems in various states. I mean, it's not necessarily the people, you know, performing criminal acts here.
Think about this. These states all over the country, these states like Ohio, they don't put much effort into their unemployment system because, I mean, fundamentally, and this isn't a partisan statement, but fundamentally, Democrats believe in social insurance, not socialism, social insurance. Social insurance is you put money into something, you get something back. Medicare, you put money in, when you get sick, you get help. Social Security, you put money in, if you're disabled or you turn 65, you get help. Unemployment, you put money in, if you get laid off, you get help. Well, the Medicare and Social Security are administered federally, so the states don't get their hands on it. Unemployment, on the other hand, is run by the 50 states. That comes out of a deal during Roosevelt where the segregationist South didn't want to have the federal government do it for obvious reasons, race reasons. But anyway, so they handle Social Security, and people like DeWine in this legislature have let the Social Security system atrophy and age, and it doesn't work very well now. They couldn't handle this huge influx of the unemployed in 2020. And I'm sure there's some fraud. There's some fraud committed by a handful of real people. But most of it is ineptitude and just the decrepitude, if you will, of this whole system.
Yeah, it sounds like voter fraud. I mean, which is minuscule in America, but it's a big issue.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Voter fraud. One person cheats out of every 10,000, and half the time they catch that one person. And that person didn't even mean to cheat. He forgot he voted somewhere. I mean, who knows? Yeah, exactly right.
Right. All right, let's get back to infrastructure because there's some good news here. I'm reading that the bipartisan bill will include your Bridge Investment Act and the Build America, Buy America Act, which I guess you've been working on this for several years, right?
Yeah, that is the good news. On the American Bridge Act, we have just thought there should be a pot of money for these huge bridge projects that cost hundreds of millions of dollars each. And so we have, communities can apply directly for these. It's $12 billion. They will not be all federal money to build these bridges. States will have to come up with something to match and all that. That's what you always do. In the Buy America, we've been working on this for, again, as long as I've been on the show. And this is the strongest Buy America provisions. It simply means if you're going to spend money on a water and sewer system, if you're going to spend money on a bridge, you ought to be making it with American steel. You ought to be hiring American workers in the United States to do this work. And so that's why we call it the Build the Jobs Act. It's not just the iron workers and the carpenters and the laborers and the pipe fitters and the electricians putting this infrastructure together. It's also the manufacturing of these products. And that's a lot of jobs. And of course, you know what they are, Flash. They're union jobs in most cases.
Right.
And you carry a union card in this country, you get better pay, you get a better work schedule, you get better benefits. That's why you do your show. That's why I fight like hell for unions.
Build back better with unions. That's what it's all about. So this infrastructure bill, are we just working out the minutia right now? It seems like it's going to go for a full vote. Where are we?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to pass. And it's bipartisan, and it's the first of two steps. That after this passes, we're going to do our, we'll probably be all Democrats, but it will do a whole lot of other things like extending the child tax credit, money for and more of the human side, money for education and broadband and housing and schools and child care, the kinds of things that Republicans fundamentally just don't support. Their definition of infrastructure is narrow. It's highways, bridges, water, sewer. I'm good with that. But our definition of infrastructure is you build a foundation under families to give them a chance. So they, in fact, can help a family come down to the down payment on that first house so they can be a homeowner, help families with child care, help families with education, help families with a child tax credit. So those families, so working class families of all races, can get a better launch in life. That's the difference. So this one, the bipartisan one, should pass in the next few days. Most Republicans will vote against it. Some, a third of them maybe will vote for it. But they're in no hurry to do this because they want to slow it down, the ones against it. But we'll have every Democrat and probably a third or a fourth of the Republicans, and that's enough to pass it.
One more issue here. We know how rents have been, and well, the housing market is crazy right now. And I understand you have some legislation that will actually lower the cost of rent for workers and families. Can you give us some details on that?
Yeah, we're doing two things real quick. One is the emergency rental assistance money we put out. The money's there. The states and local governments have got to do their jobs, and they frankly haven't in very many places around the country to help people with their back pay so they're not evicted. The other is to give a rental tax credit. You know, if you buy a house, you can deduct the cost of your mortgage. You can deduct the insurance, or I'm sorry, the interest on your mortgage, and that's a pretty good deduction, especially if you, you know, if you live in a pretty nice neighborhood and you've paid a lot for a house. So we think that renters should also enjoy a similar kind of deduction. Why not? And so that's because renters, you know, the home ownership rate in this country is not what it should be. And it's in large part because people can't come up with a down payment on a home. So then in many cases, people pay more. They pay more in their rent than they would on a mortgage if they owned a home. So we want to move much more in the direction of home ownership.
Help the people that need it the most. All right, Senator, I know you got to run. Thank you for what you do.
Thanks,
and we'll talk to you next month.
See you in early September. Thanks, buddy.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Dorsey Hager of the Central Ohio Building Trades and the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.